The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
This is 91.3 KUAF, providing you with NPR news and NPR programs since 1985. And this is Ozarks at Large for Friday, July 14th, 2017. I'm Kyle Kellums, and we begin this Friday, like we do so many others, with Michael Tilley from Talk Business and Politics on the phone. Michael, how are you?
Well, 1985, I guess you said that before, and it just didn't catch with me. That's an impressive. You guys ought to be proud of that. Well, an impressive record.
I think we are.
That's why you tell everybody.
That's right. That's right. Been here for a while. Usually, I also in the introduction say joining us from his office in Fort Smith, but you are not in Fort Smith today. You're not even in Arkansas.
Not even in Arkansas, but don't tell anybody. Don't let anybody know.
Okay. But I do appreciate you taking a few minutes to talk about some of the things that happened this week, and I'm going to do what I tend to do best. That leads to what you do best. I'm just going to simply ask you to explain what's going on with something, this Civil Service Commission episode that's going on in Fort Smith.
Yeah, and I'm going to editorialize a little bit, so I just want to point out in advance in case anybody wants to turn the town down for a second. But, you know, the city of Fort Smith has had a problem for a long time with the diversity on its police force and diversity in its fire department even, but it's really a problem with the police force. So the city administrator, Carl Gefkin, recently hired Nathaniel Clark, an African-American, which is proving problematic. I think there's still a culture, unfortunately, and I do not take any pleasure in saying this, of having a black person in charge of police force. You know, I think I learned that there was some racism, overt racism, just below the surface when we had the mascot issue at Southside High School, and I think we still see elements of that with this. And so Mr. Clark was brought in for the purpose of trying to diversify and modernize police force, and to do that, he restructured kind of the top-tier management. What he is asking for is the ability to bring, is to recruit top talent, whether that's from inside or outside the police force, which does not seem to be an unreasonable request. I mean, the new utilities director for the city of Fort Smith is not from Fort Smith. The city administrator is not from Fort Smith. The new HR director is not from Fort Smith, and I could go on. The sanitation director, when he was here briefly, was not from Fort Smith. But for some reason, the Fraternal Order of Police, which really has no authority, but they have a lot of leverage, is just really opposed to that. And Chief Clark also agreed to saying, look, of the 27 positions, I'll agree that 20 we'll hire from inside. Just let me have the chance with these seven to recruit the best and brightest, whether they're from here or elsewhere. And the Civil Service Commission is not allowing him to do that. They're bowing to this pressure from the Fraternal Order of Police, which is a largely white organization, white police officers. And so, and that's going to incense some people, and I'm sorry, but it's just so evident, Kyle. And what's problematic is they've asked Chief Clark to come in and diversify and improve and modernize the police force, but then they will not give him the tools or the authority to do that. So we're loggerheads, and part of the attempt from some directors was to just remove the Civil Service Commission, which has created the controversy. And it's all unfortunate because I think Chief Clark's compromise of saying, look, out of the 27, just let me have seven seems reasonable. And hopefully cooler heads will prevail. And I think there may be some effort by some on the Civil Service Commission and others to agree to that compromise. But and let's hope so, because this is just, again, one of those unnecessary political tiffs in Fort Smith that are not helping the city move forward. The city has a lot of pressing issues, jobs, infrastructure, and those things we need to be getting our heads around and not battling over letting a police chief do his job.
Do you get a sense that residents of the city are divided about this or paying attention?
Yeah, they definitely pay attention, and they're definitely divided. And again, unfortunately, people are going to probably take great exception with what I'm saying. I think if a white police chief came in and said, I want the ability to recruit from outside, I have a feeling there would not have been a problem.
Well, okay, so this is a challenge for the city. Here's some mixed news. Metro home sales for the Fort Smith region down June to June against last year, but up the first 6 months of 2017 against the first 6 months of 2016.
Yeah, and that's, look, the Fort Smith Metro, I've been pleasantly surprised the last couple of years. The home sales numbers have been strong. And I say strong, relative strong. They're not strong like, in Northwest Arkansas or some of the other metro areas. But when you look at the unemployment numbers, the job numbers in the Fort Smith Metro area, the housing market has held up well. considering those numbers. And I think maybe what we saw with May and June, you know, kind of the summer doldrums type thing, it'll be interesting to see what happens in the back half of the year. I still don't. I think we'll see an interest rate rise or even two, but I don't think it's going to be enough to put a kink in the growth. I still think the Fort Smith metro area is going to see a growth in home sales, not only in the number of home sales, but in the price per home. I think that's going to continue to grow, which, again, those are good markers for the Fort Smith Metro. The June numbers, it does make July and August more interesting to make sure the trend is not, you know, too far south.
Finally, one other development in Fort Smith that we'll learn much more about next week, and that is, I believe, the third installment of the Unexpected Festival, which continues, it appears, to grow. Am I right?
It not only does it grow, but look, it continues to be this fit. Incredible event. It's put Fort Smith on the map. It's put Arkansas on the map. I mean, a year ago, maybe 18 months ago, you know, there were several of these international art magazines and websites and praising Fort Smith. And I mean, number one, which really got a lot of praise, I think it was the top eight or the top 10 cities around the world where you would not expect to find such wonderful art. And Fort Smith was one of them. You know, you had, I think, some city in Peru and, you know, some of these amazing cities around the world, and Fort Smith was one of them. You know, an old blue-collar manufacturing town that, you know, Steve Clark, owner of ProPak, he was really the founder and the money behind getting this thing started 3 years ago. They're going to continue to bring these great muralists and sculpture. You know, it's really become diversified in terms of the type of art, which is great. And they're also partnering this year in terms of overlap with the Peacemaker Music Festival. And so you're going to have two great festivals going on and a lot of overlap, a lot of people in downtown Fort Smith. And, you know, so you have this Peacemaker, the Murals Festival, you have the Steel Horse Rally, the Motorcycle Festival early this year. A lot of good things. You know, if we could just get city government kind of squared up and move it in the right direction, there's so many other good things going on in the Fort Smith area.
Michael Tilley is not in Fort Smith today, but he will be back. Don't worry. Safe travels. And I'll talk to you next week. How's that?
All right. Hey, thanks for your time, Kyle.
Thank you for your time, Michael.
A total solar eclipse can change your view of life, even if you're a cold-blooded science journalist.
It was the most awe-inspiring, I dare say, spiritual experience I've ever had.
David Barron on next month's Total Eclipse and the great one that occurred in 1878, Saturday on Weekend Edition from NPR News.
Weekend Edition, Saturday, tomorrow morning from 7 to 9 on 91.3. The Walmart Arkansas Music Pavilion is in the middle of its performance season. So far, they've had 11 concerts since late April, with 12 more to go before mid-October. And since the amp opened in Rogers in 2014, there have been 86 major concerts at the venue. Each performance comes in a different size, from the number of tour buses and trucks an artist brings with them to how they want the stage to look. Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek got a look at how the AMP staff makes it all come together.
The Northwest Arkansas Technology Council held its meeting at the Walmart AMP Thursday morning. Between a Third Eye Blind concert the night before and a Hank Williams Jr. show that's coming up tomorrow.
This is a pretty small market to have such a large venue. And so we're really lucky in Northwest Arkansas to have this kind of venue and this kind of live entertainment.
That's Taylor Spiegel, the Director of Corporate Relations for the AMP and Walton Arts Center. He and Kyle May, who is the AMP's corporate manager, led the tour. And before we keep going, there's something we should get out of the way now. Here's Spiegel.
Those are not predatory birds.
Okay.
That sounds to keep the birds away. You're going to hear that a lot. I should mention that right now. Okay.
That sound, along with a couple other methods like lasers and reflective tape, are meant to keep birds from roosting under the massive white tent, which, by the way, can withstand sustained winds of 90 miles per hour. Spiegel says about 180,000 people walk under that tent each season.
Roughly about 500,000 folks have come here since the building opened, which is pretty incredible because we have 500,000 people in our community.
A lot of that has to do with how easy it is to get to the AMP from Oklahoma and southern Missouri. Spiegel says they use software developed by the Metropolitan Opera for performing arts venues to track where tickets are being bought.
It's called a heat map, and we can tell where ticket buyers come from. And depending on the show, it's either a really large circle and it goes all the way out, you know, to deep into Kansas, or if it's a sort of a more of a local act, local regional, we're going to see that heat map kind of shrink in a little bit.
Most visitors will come down I-49 to get to the venue. It makes for an easy trip, but the interstate also generates a lot of noise. The AMP solution to that is a bit more low tech. Spiegel says a lot of that noise is reduced when the venue is packed full of people because their bodies absorb some of that sound. And planting trees between the venue and I-49 helps too.
I think there's 27 trees that we've got lined up right here. And one of the main ideas behind these trees was to absorb some of that sound, kind of create a sound wall. They're going to grow. They're going to get much bigger, and hopefully they fill in that space. So it's very interesting. We've had a lot of people come out, a lot of smart people, and help us figure out how to do that.
Kyle May says the venue's capacity changes based on everything from the demographic of the audience to how the artist wants their stage to look.
I know for Lady Antebellum, last time they came through, they had a big, like just basically a big runway right down the middle. And then also sometimes they even have what's called a B stage out there at the back of the lawn. So they'll jump off the stage, run around and play a little bit for all the people in the lawn and then run back on stage. That's always a fun time.
We try to, you know, activate the venue as much as we can. And if artists want to do that, that's great.
There are three so-called bird's nests under the tent that Spiegel says can fit three spotlights each. There are also 30 55-inch Samsung LCD screens on either side of the stage.
We have created a customed rigging system to put them all in place. And we're going to show you the backside of it. It's pretty incredible. It takes quite a bit of time to put them up. It takes quite a bit of time to pull them down. They can also withstand 90-mile-an-hour winds.
Spiegel says each show involves 35 stage crew from the amp, in addition to the artist's production team, which could include 100 people for a big act. And all those people come with buses and trucks. From under the tent, Spiegel and May take the tour backstage, which Spiegel says is big enough to fit 25 buses and 20 trucks.
When I say buses, I mean tour buses. These guys, you know, live on those buses basically while they're on tour. And then the trucks are semis that house all of their production equipment, their staging, lights, sound, scenery, anything they have. It's like Tetris.
It's like
trying to figure out how to put them in here, how they're going to be able to get out.
Spiegel says this season, the amp expanded its backstage area to accommodate bigger productions. From that backstage area, the tour went through the dressing rooms.
You guys just explore, do your thing, look around.
Yep. So this room right back here is the principal dressing room.
The star dressing room.
Eventually, Spiegel and May led everyone up on the amp stage.
This is the largest stage in Arkansas. It's about 5,400 square feet, and we can have about 85,000 pounds hanging above your head on this grid. Or in a single point source, it's 14,000 pounds, which our production team would tell you that's six African elephants.
The trusses can hold everything from moving lighting to audio equipment.
And there will be a lot of these in the air. And if there's any sort of changeover, meaning there's a band that plays and then the headliner comes on, you'll see our production crew or their production crew up here sitting on top of it sometimes, harnessed in, making those changes. So.
And when it comes to running the sound, Spiegel says there's a crew that operates the audio for the audience and a separate person who operates the audio for the performer.
There's a separate audio person that deals with just monitors. Monitors meaning the sound that the artist hears out of their speakers that are on the ground or in-ear monitors. There's a separate control or operator that's here on stage.
But when it comes to regulating the temperature on the stage, Spiegel and May say there's not much that can be done about that.
They're just going to be hot.
Yeah.
Sometimes they have fans at the front of the stage. I know like some of the artists with long hair, they actually do have fans like right in front of them just blowing their hair back.
Yeah.
That's Kid Rock was one.
He needed that for vanity purposes. I'm not sure. When they build out the stage, sometimes that's, you know, because of the heat. But they're just hot.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Susanna Sitek.
The Northwest Arkansas Technology Council toured the AMP because they're partnering with the venue to kick off this year's Tech Summit that takes place in October. The AMP will host its second annual AMP Fest October 14th. AMP Fest is a beer and technology festival. The Tech Summit will then continue through Tuesday, October 17th. The Tech Council started the Tech Summit 4 years ago. Meredith Lowry, who went on the AMP tour yesterday and is co-chair of the summit, says that first year they were hoping for 150 people, ended up with 300. Last year, they had 1,500 participants from 23 states and six countries.
And this year, we're growing to a four-day event spread between AMP Fest through to Summit Day on Tuesday. And so it's a collaboration between a lot of different tech companies in the area to drive that interest in technology and show where we're going in the future with tech.
Walmart, Tyson, J.B. Hunt, and dozens of smaller local tech companies are all part of the summit. For tickets and more information, you can go to nwatechsummit.com.
91.3 FM KUAF is supported by Fayetteville Animal Shelter and Services, which is supported by the City of Fayetteville and is dedicated to the welfare of animals and the people who associate with them. 444-3456 or Fayetteville Animal Services on Facebook for photos and information. Celebrating 21 years in Northwest Arkansas, Community Clinic has served as the medical home for thousands of insured and uninsured patients in Northwest Arkansas, providing health care in 14 locations, including Springdale, Rogers, Siloam Springs, Fayetteville, Lincoln, and Prairie Grove. Healthy people, healthy community. CommunityClinicNWA.org.
A new report from Kids Count Arkansas is highlighting the issue of children's heart disease, the fifth leading cause of death for people under the age of 18. But many babies who would have died from heart problems in years past are surviving. Ann Kenda with Arkansas Public Media introduces us to a little girl they call Amazing Grace.
What's your favorite thing that you're doing this summer?
Cheer.
On a summer afternoon in Wynn, 10-year-old Grace gets ready for an outing to Sonic with her dad and little sister. When she hugs her mom, her shirt slips a bit, and you can see the deep scar across her chest from the heart transplant she had last year. Dr. Brian Ebel is Grace's pediatric cardiologist at Arkansas Children's Hospital. He says childhood heart disease is very different from the kind adults suffer.
Kids can develop acquired heart disease or disease that they weren't born with but acquired over the course of their life. But actually, it's much, much more common for kids with heart problems to be born with them. And so we call that congenital heart disease.
In cases where kids experience acquired heart disease, such as hardening of the arteries, similar to an adult's, it may cause no symptoms for many years, but then put them at high risk for an early heart attack as a young adult. In other cases, heart disease is undiagnosed until a teen athlete collapses.
But you can actually have a completely normal heart and very rarely have a viral infection that has gotten into your heart muscle that you didn't even know about that can cause athletes or adolescents to die suddenly.
Ebel says other kids are diagnosed with heart disease or defects very early and are far more likely to survive these days due to improved surgical techniques. Delia Henderson found out when she was 6 months pregnant that her baby girl would have hypoplastic left heart syndrome, in which one side of the heart is critically underdeveloped. As an infant, she had to go on full life support and have multiple surgeries. Henderson says they were eventually able to bring Grace home with a feeding tube.
Honestly, she started doing pretty well at home. She seemed like she was a little girl learning to walk. She learned to crawl. She learned to walk. We slowly started working her towards eating. And then when she was four, she got sick again, and she needed another heart surgery, and that's called a Fontan. That's the technical term for it, but it's just where they change some of the blood flow and how the blood flows in the body.
Grace also received a pacemaker, but she still needed more help. So in April 2016, she had her heart transplant. Delia Henderson says the new heart has made all the difference. Grace's summer is now filled with art, friends, cheerleading, and softball.
And she'll go underneath the shade tree or drink some water or something, but it's nothing, absolutely nothing compared to what we had before her heart transplant. After a heart transplant, we run around, we play softball. She doesn't get tired. She's able to finish the whole game. It's a light in my life to see her have some normal. And when your child's never had a lot of normal, and then all of a sudden they get to have a little bit of normal, it's a blessing because they yearn for that.
Not much is known about the child whose heart now keeps Grace alive. But Delia says they think about that other family constantly. The little girl they call Amazing Grace enters the fourth grade this fall. In Wynn, I'm Ann Kenda with Arkansas Public Media.
Support for Arkansas Public Media comes from the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas that provide reliable and affordable energy to more than 1.2 million members across Arkansas. More information at ecark.org.
That's Kansas City saxophonist Bobby Watson from his new CD. We'll hear from more Kansas City musicians like vocalist Lisa Henry, plus pianist Laszlo Gardoni, and much more this week on Shades of Jazz. I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host every Friday night from 10 till midnight and Saturday morning from 11 a.m. till 1 p.m. Shades of Jazz right here on KUAF.
It's Friday, July 14th, 2017. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me inside the Carver Center for Public Radio is Becca Martin Brown, who happens to be the features editor for the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. And Becca, that means you oversee the Friday tab that's called What's Up. You also oversee the Free Weekly.
Yes.
Have I missed anything?
And the Our Town section, the religion section, and the profile section.
That's why she can come in every week and know everything that's going on.
No, that's why I come in every week, is because they can't find me here.
All right, what do we got this week?
So tonight, Opera in the Ozarks.
Yes.
Carmen is tonight. This happens at 7:30 at Inspiration Point in Eureka Springs. You can go into Eureka and have dinner somewhere, come back out to the opera. Tickets are $10 to $30. And Carmen is probably the most melodramatic of the operas they're doing this summer.
Of this summer. I thought you were going to say of all operas. And I said, that's a high bar. Yeah.
But of the ones they're doing this summer, it's Marriage of Figaro, Susanna, and Carmen.
And Jack and the Beanstalk.
Yeah.
You know, you're right. I'd go with you there.
There's a band playing at Backspace in Fayetteville tonight, starting at 7. Actually, there are four bands playing. Neon Glittery, Open Fields, PZA, and a band called Zigtebra. She's the zebra, he's the tiger. They met doing dance in Chicago and decided to get together and do musicals and puppetry and short plays and make music.
Okay.
And then there's Kiss Me Kate.
Opens tonight at the ACO.
Won the first Tony Award ever presented for Best Musical. He's nodding because he knew this.
1949.
It is just plain frothy. A troupe of actors who have all their own issues who are opening a musical version of The Taming of the Shrew in Baltimore. It's almost a 1949 version of Noises Off with music. And here's the fun part. The director is Coleman Ray Clark, who is a Fayetteville High School graduate who started his own theater company when he was in high school, for heaven's sake. That happens at 7:30 tonight. Also Saturday, Sunday afternoon, and again
next weekend.
Saturday morning. It's Airport Day at the Arkansas Air and Military Museum Fayetteville.
Mm-hmm.
They have pancakes starting at 8:30.
All right.
They have lunch starting at 11:30. They have music, and they have a special guest, Frank Brooks, who helped build the White Hangar. It costs $10 to get into this if you're an adult.
And you get the pancakes with that?
And you get the pancakes and the lunch with that. From 9 to 11, you can go to Cooking Local at the Farmer's Market on the Fayetteville Square. It costs you nothing to do this. Heather Artripe is the chef today from Ozark Natural Foods, and she's going to do a cooking demo, and they're going to hand out recipes, and you get to taste things free. Or you can go to Third Saturday. This happens from 10 to 11 at the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History in Springdale. Special guest is Teresa Griffith, who is owner of Griffith Pottery Works, and will be demonstrating what she does.
Will she have a pottery wheel?
Yeah.
Well, that's cool.
And it's free. Saturday evening, three choices. The Sons of Otis Malone. They're performing at a cookout and ice cream social at Timber Ridge Amphitheater in Siloam Springs at 5:30 tomorrow. It's $12 to get in. Firefly Fling is tomorrow night in Fayetteville. At the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks, they're going to have glowing games and fire dancing, and Jules Taylor is going to be there as Shaky Bugs doing music for the kids and doing her wish weaving project.
Mm-hmm.
This is $4 to $11 in advance, $4 kids, $11 adults, through noon Saturday, and then 5 to 15 at the gate. Hank Williams Jr.,
mm-hmm.
You know he's going to be at the Amp. He says that he likes Arkansas, but he'd rather be here fishing. He performs at 7:30 Saturday. Tickets start at $41.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
Opera in the Ozarks continues its 67th summer season through July 21st at Inspiration Point in Eureka Springs, featuring 22 performances of three fully staged operas, including Mozart's The Marriage of Figaro, Bizet's Carmen, and Carlisle Floyd's Susanna. Sunday performances held at Arend Arts Center in Bentonville. Tickets and schedule at opera.org. Artists Laboratory Theater presents a live recording of the All You Need to Know show featuring Cars this Sunday at 7 p.m. at The Lab, located at 1030 South College in Fayetteville. This live taping, a part of Sunday night service, is free and open to all ages. More information at artlabtheater.com. Kansascityhockey.com.
Tomorrow's Wimbledon final features 37-year-old Venus Williams. If she wins the championship, she would be the second oldest woman to ever claim the tournament's women's singles title, about 8 months younger than Charlotte Cooper-Sterry, who was 37 years and 282 days old when she claimed the championship in 1908. Whether or not Venus becomes the second oldest champ in history tomorrow, we do have some history to discuss in the latest edition of An Incomplete Guide to This Week in History. It was this week in 1904 that once and future presidential candidate William Jennings Bryan drew more than 3,000 people for an address at a Chautauqua in Fort Smith. While the length of his speech that July day may not be known, we do know he was famous, or depending on your mood, infamous, for talking for a long time. During his presidential campaign in 1900, he gave speeches of up to 4 hours in length. We also don't have available right now his subject for that day, but we do know he was a pacifist, a famed critic of Darwin, though his Fort Smith appearance was more than 2 decades before the Scopes trial, and an opponent of the gold standard. It was this week, 75 years later, in 1979, that Arkansas-born Don Kessinger had a front-row seat for one of the most notorious games in Major League Baseball history. Kessinger, born in Forest City, was the player-manager for the Chicago White Sox in 79, and on July 12th that year, the Chicago-based disc jockey Steve Dahl convinced the Sox to include the destruction of disco records in between the 2 games of a doubleheader. About 50,000 fans showed up, roughly 30,000 more than expected, to watch a pretty bad team. And a riot ensued as the publicized exploding of records drew near.
Jimmy Pearsall back in the ballpark, and I'm sure glad, and I hope they don't let you people see what's going on here at Comiskey Park. One of the saddest sights I've ever seen in a ballpark in my life. This garbage of demolition.
The White Sox would forfeit the game when order could not be restored. It's the last time an American League game has been forfeited. For the record, Don Kessinger himself had nothing to do with that promotion. It was this week in 1914 that labor strife resulted in 2 deaths and the eventual closure of a mine in Frogtown in Sebastian County. The legal battles over the week-long episode stretched out for more than a decade. And it was this week in 1934 that Helen Spence was killed. This might be news to you, but the saga of Helen Spence was a major news story in the 1930s. The death was alleged to have occurred as a result of the 32-year-old's escape from the State Farm for Women. But history suggests there is much more to the story. This week, we called Denise Parkinson, who lives in Hot Springs. She's the author of the book, Daughter of the White River, Depression-Era Treachery and Vengeance in the Arkansas Delta. It's a book about Helen Spence. Denise says the story actually begins a few years before Helen's death, when Helen Spence attended the trial of the man who was accused of killing her father.
Jack Worrells was a thief and a murderer because he attempted to rob Cicero Spence, Helen's father, and he murdered him and threw him in the river. Helen attended the DeWitt County Courthouse trial, and she pulled a pearl-handled lady's pistol from a fur muff that she was wearing. It was in January. And she shot him 4 times in the chest in a pattern so tight you could put a hat over it.
The shooting was covered nationally in sensational detail. The New York Times headline, Girl Kills Alleged Slayer of Father in Court. She is tried and convicted of manslaughter. She served 8 months and was paroled. Less than a month after her parole, she was questioned about another death, a man found dead before Helen Spence had begun serving her manslaughter term. She denied any involvement, and the state's prosecuting attorney told the state parole board he was certain she was not connected to the second death. A week later, she confessed. Denise Parkinson says this turn of events is a major conundrum.
There was really no explanation. Why would she go back to prison? She had been released on the condition that she never go to Arkansas County again. So she was exiled from the only home she knew, from all her family, which she had a grandmother in St. Charles. She still had a sister who later was taken to live in Oklahoma. Why would Helen confess to a different murder of a man who had made advances on her while she was working as a waitress in DeWitt, awaiting trial?
Denise Parkinson says in the time since her book was published, she's come across a possible answer and a grisly history That suggests a horrible atmosphere for women and poor people in the Arkansas Delta during the Depression. Denise says what she was told and what she now thinks happened came from people who grew up near the women's prison.
The missing week that in the book I was going off of newspaper accounts from that time period, the newspaper accounts must have been doctored by whoever for whatever reason, because there was one document in the prison files that made no sense. It was, to me anyway, it was the parole document. It was signed by a man named W.B. Graham from Lone Oak County, which is in that area. He had put up $1,000 for Helen Spence's parole. He was the head of the school board of Lone Oak County in the 1930s, and he basically bought Helen Spence. She was not, as it says in the book, because it said in the news accounts, she was not living in Little Rock under an assumed name.
Denise says her continued research indicates, she thinks, that a woman's parole could be purchased, a Depression-era type of human trafficking. And her theory extends to why Helen Spence would confess to a murder that she didn't commit.
The most interesting photograph tells that story. There was a rather flashy Little Rock police detective. He was the head guy in Little Rock as far as the police. And in my book, you'll see an illustration of the photograph of the meeting he had when he got to brag on the front pages of all the newspapers that he had gotten the confession from the Arkansas River gun girl, Helen Spence. He did that in such a way, I think, based on all the information that came out after the book, I think he did that just to get splashy PR for himself, and he might have told Helen, oh, if you're being held against your will by this gentleman, W.B. Graham, who put up the $1,000 for your parole, all you have to do is say that you did this, and I'll fix everything.
The confession led to a 10-year sentence of hard labor. Again, newspapers across the country created dramatic headlines from Alabama to New York City. And those headlines would continue because Helen Spence had a talent for escape.
During the height of the Great Depression in Arkansas, when the prison systems had no money and there was a drought, and so their farm agricultural basis was just crumbling. So the superintendent sent the girls to Memphis to prostitute them and return money to the prison. She, Helen, had been working in the laundry, so she saved a bunch of gingham cloth napkins, the red and white check gingham napkins, and sewed them into the lining of her prison dress. And when they stopped on the way in West Memphis at the bus station, she went into the ladies' room and turned her dress inside out and just waltzed away because she was beautiful.
But she was always caught again and given lashes, and at one point committed to the state mental institution and was submitted to torturous punishments. Finally, this week, 83 years ago, she escaped for the last time from a specially designed cell.
They set her up. They let her escape. According to the grand jury testimony, there was a man at the prison who was working on the water pump, on the water tower, the place where we found the foundations 80 years later. He claimed that it looked to him as though they were letting her escape, just walk away. So when they caught up to her, there was some discrepancy in who actually pulled the trigger, because it was a kill shot behind the ear, a close-up assassination-type execution behind the right ear. Yet the man who took the rap for the killing was carrying a shotgun.
The drama continued after Helen's death. The assistant prison superintendent was charged with accessory to murder for purposely allowing Helen to escape, but he was acquitted. The trustee, charged with firing the fatal shot, was convicted and served a sentence. Then years later, would tell people about his role in the ordeal.
Frank Martin, who took the rap for killing her, the prison trustee, who was himself a murderer, went around bragging that he had killed the notorious Helen Spence, and he went in to buy a loaf of bread in Casco, and a lady from the river was behind the counter, and she sold him a different loaf and said it tasted just as good and cost less. And he didn't wake up the next morning after he ate dinner that night.
Denise Parkinson is the author of Daughter of the White River, Depression-Era Treachery and Vengeance in the Arkansas Delta, about Helen Spence. We heard excerpts from a conversation recorded earlier this week. You can also read Denise's entry about Helen Spence at encyclopediaofarkansas.net. And she also maintains a Facebook page advocating for a pardon for Helen Spence, who was killed 83 years ago this week. And that is your latest incomplete guide to this week in history.
On this week's On the Media, science fiction writers embrace the challenge of depicting cataclysmic climate change.
History's going so fast, technology's changing so fast, that we are living in a science fiction story that we're all writing together.
A new language for our changing world on this week's On the Media from WNYC.
Sunday morning at 11 on 91.3. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums, and with me inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is a friend of the show, Baird Blaine. Baird, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Kyle.
First met you when you were playing music.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went to your shop where you make instruments. You're a luthier.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk a little bit about both playing and creating instruments today.
All right.
How's that?
Sounds great.
And we'll get to this in a minute, but you brought a guitar in with you that is kind of special, right?
It is, yes. It's the it's a guitar made from a famous tree, pretty special piece of wood. A client commissioned this guitar, bought the piece of wood, and sent it to me, and it's been in the works for a year or so.
Okay, we'll talk about that in a minute. First, mm-hmm. let's talk about something you're putting together at Stage 18, where you're going to have sort of a monthly variety show?
Yeah, it's something I wanted to do for years now, where I've been building guitars for primarily musicians for 12 years now, and I've always thought, man, I need a venue where I could, these people that come through town to see me, I could book people once in a while, you know, to promote my work as well as help my friends on the road out a little bit with a show. So David Embry opened the Stage 18 on the square, and it's a beautiful little listening room pub vibe. So we're planning to do a monthly variety show with several acts. I'm also trying to incorporate a kind of a luthier guitar geek social hour, maybe ahead of time for an hour or two. I'll be on hand and I'll display some instruments. Friday will be our first show with, we're going to have a little Three Penny Acre reunion scene with Brian and Bernice Hembry. That ought to be fun.
You were with Three Penny for quite a while.
Three Penny Acre for 8 years or however many. So Bernice is my favorite person in the world to sing with, so I figured it'd be a good kickoff to get them. And I'll probably start with a little solo scene and then have them play some Smokey in the Mirror stuff, and then we'll end with a little Three Penny Acre jam, so to speak.
So one of the goals with this monthly show is, obviously, if you're on stage, you'll have a Baird guitar, but some other folks who you've created guitars for?
Yeah, yeah, we have, I already have my next 4 months almost lined out, 5 months. I have, Handmade Moments is going to be the September show. And Joel's been playing one of my guitars for the last 6 months or so. He's already broken in really nicely. I saw it yesterday. And Rebecca Loby in October. Next month, I'm going to have Still on the Hill. I've been playing with a little trio with Kelly Mulholland and John Davies. So they'll be with me next month. And then we'll get Don and Kelly to do a set. And it ought to be great.
Sounds like it'll be fun and somewhat informal.
Yeah, it is going to be somewhat informal. You know, it's I want to encourage the craft in Northwest Arkansas as well. There's some other people building guitars and into it, and so eventually I'd like to maybe showcase a different person doing it every month or something. Have a little kind of like a arts opening type vibe, something before the show where people, you know. We want to start like a little luthier collective of Northwest Arkansas, something like that. You
know? Is that not a competitive world, the Northwest Arkansas luthiers?
I don't make it competitive, no. I mean, the dissemination of information is part of life, and I really enjoy helping others along the way because others helped me along the way, and I feel like that, you know, it's all give and take, and there should be no competition in arts.
I would think that when you start your career toward being a luthier, that a lot of your energy has to go to learning, creating, learning from mistakes.
Yeah.
Does that mean it cuts into the time that you used to play the guitar?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was a pretty dedicated player in my youth, you know, hours and hours every day. And as I got into building, you know, I went to school for guitars when I was 24, and I moved here right after that. And as I got more and more into building, I kind of, my passions diverted from playing as much to building. And then I made it a business, which means it takes priority because I'm dependent on it for a living. So there's that aspect. And then nowadays that I have kids, you know, I spend 3 days a week with my two-year-old. So I, getting out in the evenings and playing music has become secondary pursuit lately. And part of this is just to get me out playing more as well. So.
Well, and when you're a musician, not only are you out at night, sometimes you're away from home.
True. I'm a homebody.
Yeah, you know? So being a luthier, you can...
We just built on the house. I have a beautiful workbench at home now, a little studio space where I can do a lot of my carving and set up repair work at home. And so I'm enjoying it. My kids are around it more and being a part of it more, which part of why I wanted to do that, you know.
Well, you said that the social hour that you want to get started with this event at Sage 18 every month for people to talk about guitars or woodwork or wood. Let's talk about the piece of wood that became the guitar down here from the tree.
The tree, they call it. Yes, this was it was an incredible tree that was a 10-foot diameter mahogany tree, 100-foot long log. Native loggers found it in the Chusibol jungle in Honduras in 1968, I believe. And it was such an amazing tree. With a tree, you can tell whether a tree has figure in it, which is like uncharacteristic genetics where it will grow. Like the fiddleback maple is the classic where it has the waves, but not every tree has that. In the mahogany world, most trees are somewhat plain. And this tree, you can tell by the bark because it'll have spiral bark or really wavy bark. And so native loggers found this tree, knew it was special, and so they chopped it down, which is heartbreaking in itself. But there was some American veneer mills at the time near there that they knew they would get big money for this log. The problem was it fell in a ravine and nobody could move it.
Because it was so big, right?
Yeah. So it's lay there for 18 years until an American guy went in with bulldozers and a number of people. They basically, with chainsaws, cut it up into movable pieces, hauled it like 75 miles through the jungle to a river, floated it another 80 miles to a old steam-powered mill where it was sliced up and then brought to the States. So back in the early 80s when it came to the States, you could get it for a reasonable price. And it's this pillowy quilt figure that's almost unheard of in mahogany. I've never seen mahogany anything close to this.
It achieved legendary status.
It did.
Guitarists, luthiers, music fans have heard of
furniture,
the tree.
Furniture people. I believe, like, whether I don't know if it was George Lucas or Steven Spielberg, one of their offices is paneled with it, and it's just an astoundingly gorgeous tree. It's almost psychedelic in its depth.
And it shows you how big it was that still things are created from it now.
Yeah, well, it's worth so much money now that the tabletops and the pieces of furniture that were made out of it are being sliced up into guitar wood because it's worth a ton of money as guitar wood. So
how did this come to you?
A client of mine who has several of my other guitars from Colorado just on a whim bought this piece of wood and sent it to me, and we've been talking about it for, you know, a year. It's been in some form of the works. It's also a multi-scale instrument with the fan fret, which every string is a different scale length, so the nut is not square, the saddle is not square. You know, it has an inch difference, which is kind of it's a boutique thing people have been doing for a while, but not on a large scale just because it's much more difficult to do. But it makes much more sense with the string dynamics of, you know, you want a shorter scale for the smaller treble strings, longer scale for a heavier gauge string. Like the physics make complete sense. And it's a really great application for longer scale instruments, basses, mandocellos, things like that, where it evens out the tensions more or less.
So you have this piece of wood. Yeah. You talk about it with the client for a while. Then you start working on it.
Yeah.
In the back of your mind, can you allow yourself to think, oh, don't screw up? Or do you just go about...
It's absolutely terrifying. this wood is notorious for the sides breaking because it's so figured. So I got a chemical wood softener when I bent the sides from a friend of mine. And I took my time doing it right. And it was in my side bender, which is a heat blanket device. And I was hearing pops and cracks. And I was like, no. I spent a sleepless night thinking I was going to have to try and find another set of sides. And I did some fancy veneer work on the inside waist, and it worked out good. It's fine.
It's beautiful. Does it sound different than...
It's so new, and I've been scared to play it too much, so it hasn't been broken in particularly, but...
Well, try to break it in a little bit here for us.
Yeah, I would love to play something.
And this will be on display Friday night when...
Yeah, I'll have it there, and it's almost ready to ship to him. I'll probably be shipping it next weekend right after the show, so... let's see. Aside from being a builder musician, I tend to write some songs now and then, which I'd like to get back into. But I'll do this song. This is not one I wrote, but it's one I just dredged up from my past, and it has a nice political stint to it, which people will appreciate, I think.
Let me move this mic over here so we can get the guitar.
This is a Phil Oakes tune called Millionaire. I started out with one lone dollar, gambled with a man and a one millioner. Bought me a gun, robbed my brother, I'm bad and I don't care. I'm gonna be a millionaire. I'm bad and I don't care. I'm gonna be a millionaire. I hopped on a ship and we sailed on the waves. Dealt in rum, I dealt in slaves. I left my captain in a watery grave. He's gone, but I don't care. I'm gonna be a millionaire. He's gone, but I don't care. I'm gonna be a millionaire. Rich, pretty little wife, brought her misery every day of her life. She slit her wrist with a silver knife. You can't pin that on me. Yeah, the money belongs to me. Yeah, you can't pin that on me. Yeah, the money belongs to me. How many of you wanna see me dead? How many of you wanna have my head? How many of you just live your lives? Yeah, wishing you were me, boys. Wishing you were me. Found myself in a good position to buy myself a cheap politician, yeah, the cheapest. I won the next big election, and that's just how it went. Now I own the president. Yeah, that's just how it went. Now I own the president. But how many of you wanna see me dead? How many of you wanna have my head? How many of you just live your lives? Yeah, wishing you were me, boys. Wishing you were me. When you say a prayer down on your knee, ask the Lord to forgive you, please. And if it crosses your mind, say one for me, 'cause I know where I'm bound, boys. I know where I'm bound. I know where I'm bound, boys. I know where I'm bound. I started out with one lone dollar, gambled with a man and won me another. Bought me a gun,
Robbed my brother, I'm bad, and I don't care. I'm gonna be a millionaire. I'm bad, and I don't care. I'm gonna be a millionaire.
Great, thanks.
At Stage 18, what time will music start?
I believe we're shooting for an earlier type show, so 7:30 to 8-ish.
Perfect.
Somewhere around there.
Yeah.
So I imagine if there's people interested in guitars and they want to come hang out, talk to me, I'll be around on hand probably from 6 at least on. And I'm going to bring this guitar. I have a brand new arch top octave mandolin that's really spectacular. I'll probably bring that one too. And a few others potentially, and we'll just have a good time.
And you'll keep us up to date on who's going to be there?
I will. Mm-hmm. I will, yeah. Some of the dates for the next months remain to be seen, but, you know, the Handmade Moments, Rebecca Lobie, we have some great people coming to town, so it's going to be great.
Baird, thanks for coming in. Congratulations on the guitar.
Thanks for having me, Kyle.
You bet. Blaine is a luthier, musician, singer, and songwriter, and he'll be part of a Three Penny Acre reunion tonight at Stage 18 in downtown Fayetteville. You can find out more about him at BairdGuitars.com.
91.3 is supported by Highlands Oncology Group, helping patients fight the battle every day with a team of cancer specialists in both Benton and Washington counties. Services include American College of Radiology Certified Imaging Departments, Infusion Centers, Pharmacy, Clinical Trials, and more. HighlandsOncologyGroup.com. Fayetteville artist and sign painter Olivia Trimble will present a retrospective on sign painting in the Ozarks Wednesday, July 19th at noon at the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History. Trimble's passion revolves around improving the urban landscape through public art, effective and evocative signage, and strengthening the narrative within communities. ShilohMuseum.org or 750-8165.
24,000 feet up Mount Everest, the deadliest storm in the mountain's history was about to hit.
The teams had doctors, but only at base camp. They didn't have doctors high up on the mountain. I was the only doctor within reach.
And the only doctor who could respond to a crisis.
You really never know how you're going to respond to a crisis until that time happens.
Crisis and response, next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
The TED Radio Hour, this and every Sunday afternoon, beginning at 1 on KUAF. Well, that just about wraps up. Well, no, it does wrap up. Another full week of new daily editions of Ozarks at Large. But don't forget, weekend Ozarks at Large, Sunday morning at 9, some of the stories you may have missed during the past week. And then Monday at noon and 7, we'll start another new week of brand new shows on KUAF. A service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Siloam Springs. Ozarks at Large and Weekend Ozarks at Large, productions of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. You can follow us as a podcast if you'd like, if you can't always be with us at noon or 7 when we broadcast on the air. It's simple. You can subscribe through iTunes or Stitcher, and it's absolutely free. And if you're on the go, you can also listen to us through the absolutely free KUAF app. To learn more about the program or all or any of the programs on all or any of the KUAF signals, you can go to KUAF.com. Our opening theme is written and performed by Daryl Sean. Thanks so much for listening. Have a safe and fun weekend.